I started learning about Father Sabine Griego months before I visited his home turf. I scoured old newspaper clippings, court documents, and church records, taking in stories of the more than 24 people who've said Griego molested them as kids. And it's already difficult to read about this kind of abuse, but it's another thing entirely to hear it from a survivor. On a warm October day in Las Vegas, New Mexico, producer Rita Daniels and I are visiting a man we'll call David. There's bright red Robertson High School Cardinals paraphernalia in his yard and entryway.
Hi.
Ladies, come on in. How are you?
Thank you. It's Cardinal territory here.
Somebody told me it's for good luck. I don't know. Uh-huh.
David is an energetic, fit-looking 51-year-old. Back in 1980, he was 13, right around the age when a good Catholic kid should start the process of confirmation in the church. But like a lot of teenagers, he was just over doing the things his parents expected him to do.
The more I thought about things, it made less and less sense to me.
This was not going to fly in David's family. He says they were super hardcore Catholic. They'd always go to mass at both churches in Las Vegas. So when David started asking hard questions about the faith, his parents called for reinforcement.
So they reached out to Sabine, like as a personal favor, asking him to talk to me to see if he could get me back into church. And that's when the abuse started.
Father Sabine Griego was raised in a small northern New Mexico town and went to Immaculate Heart of Mary Seminary in Santa Fe. In his early career, he served in several parishes, as well as a college and a hospital, as a counselor and chaplain. By mid-career, he was a high official of the Santa Fe Archdiocese and a serial child abuser. In 1980, when he met David, Griego had just been assigned to a parish in Albuquerque, but still traveled often to his aging mother's house just outside Las Vegas. David says that's where his parents dropped him off for that first meeting with the priest. They talked about David's family, and Griego brought out some wine, telling him, in vino veritas, in wine there's wisdom.
Well, at the time I didn't recognize it, but now that I got older, I really think that he drugged me, because I remember having maybe half a glass of wine. When I kind of came to, in my pants and my underwear were down around my ankles, and he was also down around my ankles, I kind of freaked out, and he just kept telling me, it's all right, it's all right. You know what I mean? And God knows what I do, and God's all right with what I do, and it's all right with God what I do. And so it was super confusing to me.
David left the house. He didn't tell anyone. And for a while, he avoided the priest. But he says as his freshman year went on, Griego started sending him gifts.
In our initial conversation with him, I expressed to him that my parents weren't very well off financially and stuff. So he sent me money for school clothes, and he bought me cleats for school, and he did all these things. He would send me money for lunch and send me a birthday card with money, send me Christmas presents.
Sabine Griego had a master's degree in psychology and by many accounts played on kids' unfulfilled needs to get close to them. David's relationships with his mom and dad were always rocky. So Griego would give David fatherly advice. He'd really listen to him. He'd also give him alcohol and marijuana. And he even bailed David out of jail when he'd get into trouble for breaking into houses and stealing. For the next 3 years, Father Griego would take David, along with other boys, on trips to Albuquerque to the Queen of Heaven Parish. On Sundays, they'd count money from the collection plates. And on Mondays, David says, they'd take some of that cash and hit the town.
We would go a lot because he was really good friends with the Archbishop at the time, Robert Sanchez. And we'd go places with Robert and everybody. He was like, it was kind of like being like with a rock star in New Mexico, right? I was a kid. I'd be 14, 15 years old, and we'd be drinking and eating steaks and even smoking cigars. And then all of a sudden to have the manager or the owner of the restaurant come and say, no, don't worry, it's on us.
Griego molested David repeatedly while in Albuquerque at the Queen of Heaven Rectory. One of the other boys abused there was Brian Gutierrez, who's been public about his case in recent years. He says it's not like Griego was unsupervised at the parish house in Albuquerque.
And in fact, I remember there was another priest that lived there, Father Fitzgerald, kind of like a cranky, cantankerous kind of a gentleman. Him telling Sabine Griego to keep it down. So there was another adult there, another priest, who lived there and was probably aware.
David, our Cardinals fan, escaped the abuse only when he graduated high school. He headed west and cut off contact completely with Griego, with the church, even with his parents for a while. He struggled with drugs and alcohol, and he worked for a time as a dancer and an escort.
I was very hypersexual, if that makes sense. I mean, because I wanted to prove to myself that I wasn't gay. If you think about yourself as a human being and how you're formed and what your foundation is, to all of a sudden you don't have any foundation and you're just kind of just out there, man. That's how I was for a long, long time. It was always hard for me to form any real relationship, if that makes sense. I mean, because always, even now, I don't trust anybody.
Pleased to meet you. I'm going to put my headphones on if you don't mind. So I just
we spent a couple days in Las Vegas trying to understand how such a prolific abuser could get away with this for so many years. Producer Ellen Berkovich and I drove a few miles outside of town to meet with another survivor.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
That's a beautiful day. I'm well, thanks.
It is.
We'll call him Antonio. He lives with his wife, kid, and hyper black lab puppy who jumped into Ellen's car when we arrived.
She smells. Oh my God, that's so cute. Come here.
We're not using his real name because, like David, Antonio has told very few people about the abuse. It started in 1973 when he was 10 years old and an altar boy at Our Lady of Sorrows Church. Every month or so, Father Griego would take him out to the surrounding villages for Mass.
I thought it was an incredible thing to be going to these mission churches with the priest. First, you got to be chosen. So it was an honor for me to be there. And then that honor just turned into a nightmare. I used to have to push him away. I used to sit in the back of the seat, back of his car, so he wouldn't fondle me while he was driving. Thank God I was little and I could evade him most of the time. Is that crazy? Trying to evade your priest?
The forced fondling and oral sex went on for a couple of years until Griego was transferred to Albuquerque. Antonio never acknowledged the abuse to himself or anyone else until a moment just 3 years ago when he was helping out the mayordomos, the stewards of the church.
So I went down to the basement of the rectory and man, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. Something bad had happened to me there.
Antonio filed suit with Brad Hall's law firm, and he was surprised when his younger brother also filed a lawsuit. He'd never known his brother had been abused by a different priest, Father Mike O'Brien. Antonio says he still feels guilty he couldn't protect his brother, who's struggled a lot throughout his life. Antonio still hasn't told his parents about his own abuse. Sabine Griego still lives just outside Las Vegas, in his late mother's trailer home. After he retired from the church in the early 90s, and even after he was laicized in 2004, we've heard he continued to offer himself as a priest at church and community functions.
We're in Las Vegas, New Mexico here. We're on the historic plaza. I'm getting in the car. We are right across the street from Our Lady of Sorrows.
Rita Daniels and I decide to head to Griego's house to see if we can learn anything about the man himself or about the role he occupies in the community after all these years.
It seems like the location of where Sabine Griego lives is pretty well known. And so I just got a text from the John Doe that we just interviewed. He says you head toward the Montezuma Castle. So we're going to go check it out.
All righty. Your emergency brake's on.
We pass Luna Community College, where Griego worked as a professor until at least 2008. We pass the state hospital, where Griego was a popular chaplain.
Okay, so it said across from the fairgrounds, right? Oh my God, so this is it. What does it say?
Los Griegos. Right on the sign. Is there a Sabine Griego there?
The next house. Awesome. Okay, great.
Thank you. Where are we now? This one's a little more fenced off, huh?
There's a sign that says, beware of dog. Somebody's in there. He's in there looking at us.
Really?
Yeah, do you want me to go?
I mean, I'm not going to go in with this dog here, but...
Hi.
Are you Sabine Griego? We're two radio reporters. We're hoping to speak with you if you're available.
Okay.
Right. So we kind of just waved in the direction of the window, and Sabine Grego came out. He's a, I don't know, average height, late 70s, early 80s, wearing a casual sweatshirt, and I had to kind of yell to tell him who we were, but he said he was not available, and he walked back in the house. That's kind of what I expected.
David has only run into Sabine Griego a couple times over the years, which is surprising given they live just a few miles apart in a town of 13,000. Still, David told us there have been times when Griego's presence has felt like a huge burden.
I'm going to be very honest with you. There's a couple occasions that where I was buzzed that I actually went to his house. And I'm glad he wasn't there. I don't know if I could get myself in trouble. I'm not going to be named in this setting. You know, with zip ties and in thoughts of what I was actually going to do with him, you know what I mean? And how I was going to torture him and how I was going to make him feel the pain that I felt. And I'm glad, because even had I done that, then I would be stuck with that. I was still letting him have power over me.
By the time Father Griego met David in 1980, he'd already allegedly molested at least 20 children. And given how underreported childhood sexual abuse is, that number is probably much higher. But by 1980, Griego had already been reported to his friend Archbishop Sanchez at least twice. Once in 76 and again in 79, when a rumor around town had it that Griego had tried to sleep with a teenager he'd taken to Mexico. According to a deposition of a Las Vegas priest who brought this to Sanchez, the archbishop replied that this was very serious, he was very concerned, and that he'd take care of it. A few years later, Sanchez promoted Griego to a position of power on the Archdiocesan Personnel Board, the panel that moved serial abusers around from place to place. We know all this from a huge docket of materials released last month as part of a civil suit against the Archdiocese of Santa Fe. It's really a tiny crack in the fortress of secrecy the church has built around their accused priests. But it's still a really big deal. It's the biggest public disclosure of church documents in New Mexico since survivors started coming forward in the 90s. Nearly 200 of those 1,000 pages deal with Sabine Griego. And after reading through them, I had a lot more questions. The Archdiocese of Santa Fe never returned my requests for an interview. So to help make sense of it all, I went back to one of the attorneys who helped prepare this docket, who's represented about 70 survivors of priest sexual abuse since 2012.
Yeah, my name is Levi Monagle. I'm an attorney with the law offices of Brad D. Hall in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
I met with Levi Monagle at his office in downtown Albuquerque. I wanted to get into the nitty-gritty of these new Griego files, like exactly who knew what about Griego and when, and why did it take the church so long to officially laicize or defrock him? And Monagle did have some insights to share about how priests may have swapped abuse stories under the seal of confession, for example. But he also said, look, take a minute to zoom out from this Griego story.
None of these priests should be assessed in a vacuum. The true significance is, I think, most apparent when you look at the situation as a whole. Like, when you look at the sheer number of priests that the Archdiocese was aware of, even in the 60s and 70s, and even earlier than that, the just sort of systemic disregard for the interests of children. And not just with the church, right? When you have parents going to CYFD back in the 70s saying, hey, you know, Father Donnellan out in Farley is abusing kids at this ranch. Like,
okay, Father Donnellan and the ranch. This is a tangent, but it's worth going on because it shows how public officials really helped enable these abusers. And it all circles back around to Sabine Griego. The Hacienda de los Muchachos was a nonprofit for troubled boys about 90 miles northeast of Las Vegas. Its director was a priest named Edward Donnellan, who kind of sequestered boys out at this rural ranch and allegedly raped many of them in the 1970s. Letters from neighbors to the archbishop described the blackened curtains of the building, and a priest one mother said was known as, quote, queer. but the ranch only made headlines after two boys ran away from the hacienda in the winter of 76. One of them, 12-year-old Vaughn Bishop, froze to death. Let me just say that again. A 12-year-old boy died running away from the priest who was supposed to be caring for him.
The state turning around, rather than going in there and kicking the doors down, goes to the archbishop kind of genuflecting and saying, hey, could you kind of control your guy? He's abusing all these kids, and we think that's not great, you know, so maybe, you know, Your Eminence, maybe do something about that, please. And the bishop saying, oh, yes, well, we'll send Father Griego out there to investigate Father Donnellan. And
you heard that right. Archbishop Sanchez sent Sabine Griego to go close down the hacienda and to report back to the state.
We'll get to the bottom of this. And Donnellan is still in active ministry in 1989, right, abusing kids down in the South Valley.
The crazy thing is, this was not the first time the church and the state effectively protected Father Ed Donnellan by keeping his secrets amongst themselves. Years later, a man who'd been victimized at the hacienda sued two top state corrections officials for failing to report Donnellan as a perpetrator even before he came to the hacienda. The lawsuit against Howard Leach and Felix Rodriguez at Corrections claimed they received allegations against Donnellan back in 1970 and reported him to the archbishop, but never to law enforcement.
There's complicity at every level, and it should cause us to question why we devalue other people's children, because everybody values their own.
I thought the public release of 1,000 pages of documents might bring Levi Monagle some relief. After all, he and his colleagues have been fighting the church's gag orders on documents like these in dozens of cases, trying to get more information out to the public as the archdiocese settles lawsuit after lawsuit. Instead, as I grill him about Father Griego, Monagle just seems even more frustrated by the church's unwillingness to own up to its actions.
Judge Malott's order makes about 1,000 pages of material publicly available. That's a small percentage of material that's been produced in litigation.
He says even to get this much, it took dozens of lawsuits, dozens of victims asking for more transparency, legal intervention from the media.
It took a lot of time and energy. It was a battle that the church fought tooth and nail. This was an enforced transparency. Now, maybe at the end of the day, that has the same sort of cathartic effect, but I doubt it, right?
By the end of our interview, Monagle is visibly agitated. He says he just feels more and more crazy being the keeper of binders full of damning information that the public can't see.
This information needs to be assessed and analyzed and poured over and pieced together if we're ever going to figure out how this happened, right? By continuing to tie all this up under confidentiality orders, all they're doing is preventing people from figuring out how this happened. And if we don't figure out how this happened, then we, you know, repeat the mistakes of the past.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Last month, Archbishop John C. Wester published an editorial in the Albuquerque Journal explaining the archdiocese's efforts to right their wrongs in the last 25 years. In addition to releasing the credibly accused list of 74 names this fall, he said the church has added background checks and psychological screenings on prospective priests. They give victims free counseling and offer various trainings. And Wester, in his editorial, argues that these efforts have worked. He says the archdiocese has only received 2 reports of priest sexual abuse that happened since it adopted a zero-tolerance policy in 1993. Still, advocates like Brian Gutierrez, one of our survivors, say the church should be doing more. Gutierrez is now a 48-year-old engineering supervisor, and he describes himself as one of the fortunate ones as far as recovery goes. He says the archdiocese should be pulling out all the stops to track down survivors who might not be able to seek help on their own.
I'll refer back to a homily that I remember, and it might have been Sabine Griego that actually gave this homily. If somebody was being repentant for lying, and his penance or her penance was to take a feathered pillow and take it outside on a windy day and let the wind carry the feathers away. And then their task was to collect every one of those feathers, right? An impossible task. So I think there's more victims than you could probably find and account for. But there should be still a monumental effort to find them and help them.
The Archdiocese is planning one step forward when it comes to transparency. They announced a series of public discussions about priest abuse. Church officials will field questions during events at 5 New Mexico parishes in the next few months, including one in January at Immaculate Conception Church in Las Vegas. These days, David is somewhat of a role model in Las Vegas. He says he gets asked to be a godparent a lot, so he still has to have some connection with the church.
I have 23 godchildren right now, and I express to everyone that I'm not a practicing Catholic, and they know this about me. I'm kind of just like over the Catholic religion, you know what I mean? It's a farce, man.
He says the abuse and his inability to tell anyone about it for decades, it made him see parts of his culture that can be really harmful.
Catholics and Hispanic Catholics especially were really good with denial. And I hate to lump all Hispanics together, but it's not like we're very open as far as talking about feelings and talking about anything. So nobody, even though I think people might have had suspicions, I don't remember ever anybody saying anything.
Unlike David, Antonio is still very much in the church.
Well, it hasn't changed my faith at all, because I understand that it's just a few men. My faith in Catholicism is still the same. It never will change.
One thing you hear from survivors over and over is their first priority is not to see 80-year-old Sabine Griego locked up. One person told us, look, he's an old man. At this point, he can barely leave his house for fear of being publicly accused or assaulted. What survivors like Antonio want is public acknowledgement, a genuine apology from the highest levels of the church. What they get, usually, is a monetary settlement.
Most of us didn't want none of their money, but this is the route they took when they could have just admitted it. We'd all move on from that in a positive way.
The thing that's helped David move on is years of ongoing therapy, just talking about what happened.
And it took me a long time to realize that it wasn't my fault. But hopefully, if somebody's listening to this now and they've gone through it or going through it now, you have to know somebody that you can tell, a teacher, a coach, a friend. It will make you feel better. It's almost like a cancer, right? You get it out and it's not eating you anymore.
The state of New Mexico has a law that requires anyone who hears about child abuse to report it to law enforcement. And when we're talking about cases 30, 40 years ago, it's impossible to pinpoint all the places where the system broke down, to really know how a single priest was allowed to wreak havoc for so long. It blows my mind that the cops never went knocking on Griego's door. But Antonio told us, it's really not that surprising in a small town like Las Vegas.
Again, if you go back to the 1950s, 60s, here, the chief of police, the district attorneys, they're all Catholics. They're all deep-rooted in our religion. So I don't think anything would have got done. It was a whole culture, a whole cloud, if you will, over the Catholic Church, with the priest on top of that cloud, doing whatever he wants.
We couldn't make Sabine Griego come off his porch and explain himself, any more than survivors like David, Antonio, and Brian can make the church give up its confidential documents. In a better world, the institutions we believe in would admit their mistakes, and people who abuse their power would have that power immediately taken away. But that wasn't the reality in New Mexico 40 years ago, and I doubt it's the reality today. This episode of Dark Canyon was produced by me, Hannah Colton, for KSFR Santa Fe Public Radio. Production support from Ellen Berkovich, Rita Daniels, and Claire Schoen. Music in this episode was by Martine DeBoer, Justin K. Comer, JCJP, Poddington Bear, Kai Engel, and the Blue Dot Sessions. You can reach us at darkcanyonnm@gmail.com.